All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.
Welcome, we're live and we're happening. Welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage. Just after me, John will be me. A big thanks to Groomy and the Guilty Pleasure Show. Groomy will be back next Wednesday from 5. Welcome. Lots have happened in the week, and I've seen it on Facebook. I've been keen to avoid it. Lots of jokes and political opinion. It seems like it is business as usual to some. But I mean, Mr. Angry would probably answer that better than me, John.
Yes, it's certainly business as usual for in a manner of speaking. But we'll come across those bits as we go on this evening. But what I wanted to do mainly this week, we'll have a little break in our series of interviews just for 1 week, because I want to draw some attention to activity that's going on around the world to help those in need. This won't be the only show that we do on the subject, but I do want to highlight some of the great sort of mutual aid and workers organising and that kind of stuff. Especially those trying to protect themselves and those around them that are subjected to the predatory actions of capitalism during this crisis, which our beloved system has no ability to deal with. And the cost of that inability is paid for in lives of citizens, mostly working class ones, and a large percentage of them from the BAME community, especially in this country. So tonight's show is going to be, kind of roughly speaking, split up into two. The first half I've just called the actions list, and this is going to be highlighting some actions that are going on, as I say, in regards sort of mutual aid and organisations helping each other out and those most in need. We have a few examples, obviously just designed to kind of give you the idea of the sort of thing that's out there, which also is designed to kind of help you if you want to start something yourself, because in these times it's very easy to feel helpless and not know where to start in helping out those in need or defending ours and others' rights working through these the terrible pandemic. Many businesses and corporations are taking full advantage and attacking workers to an even harder extent than before, because they know how to use a crisis in the way that many of us are reticent to do so. Many mutual aid groups around the world, and we hope to highlight them here as much as we can. If, however, your neighbourhood lacks such organisation, you want to start, hopefully by focusing on a few examples here, we can give you the guidelines for not just mutual aid, but also defending and upholding workers' rights and making sure authorities and the like give key workers the protections that they need. So the second part of the show will concentrate a little bit more on some quite high-profile workers' activities at places like Amazon, well, specifically at Amazon, and basically whatever else we can squeeze into the hour. You know how we roll on this show, so we cover everything we can in the time that we've got. So I'm going to start with the Action Network in New York. They have published a useful set of ideas as part of their call to provide members of the essential workforce there with the health and safety protections that they need, which they have dubbed New York Health and Essential Rights Order, or NY HERO for short. The NY HERO Executive Order will quickly improve the health and safety in workplaces across New York by implementing the following measures, it says. So on the health and safety protocols to protect public health, they have the following bullet points. Personal protective equipment requirements, PPE as we know it as well. Physical distancing requirements, hand hygiene requirements, disinfection and deep cleaning requirements, requirements to provide notice when workers contract the virus, and quarantine housing for workers living in employer housing. Seems mad actually to think about that. That's a major state, major, most famously known for its big city, where you still have people in employer housing. That's something I don't think you've got that much of these days, but there you are. Enforcement and prohibition or retaliation is the next section. Workplaces should establish a faculty pandemic safety committee that can raise concerns about health and safety conditions and notify the employer about worker complaints and concerns. No employer should take action against workers who raise any concern or information about workplace health and safety practices. And then it says any worker has the right to refuse to do work under conditions where they feel at risk of contracting or spreading COVID-19. We'll add something to that in a minute. But this is in no way a comprehensive list. I think all of it is correct. I support it. And it's a very good place to start if your workplace or your neighbourhood is lacking these provisions, wherever you are in the world. That's why I think it was a list of things worth reading out. And most important now, we are all being rushed back to work to protect capital, often at the cost of our lives or those of others. So we really do need to organise very well. As some of you may know now, we do I don't tend to manage to do it weekly because I tend to forget, but sort of two major call-outs and questions that we have every week. The first one is, of course, where are the Patriots? Because those are the people that talk very much about their love of country. And yet around the world where I look, and especially around the country I'm sitting in now, they don't seem to be anywhere. They're not putting their money where their mouth is. They're not involved in mutual aid groups. They're not involved in producing PPE where they can. You know, there's some famous, I'm sure we're not the only place that's got this, but there's a couple of famous examples we've mentioned on the show in this country of people who have got hold of a load of 3D printers and printing up their own PPE equipment and taking them up to the local hospital. These are just normal everyday people, you know, living in the suburbs or in the city, and they've taken it upon themselves to use their resources for the betterment of those in need and to help to improve the healthcare of all of us, which is, of course, done by the multi-ethnic, multi-racial, multinationalist staff that work in the NHS and work in care homes and work in the care sector in general. Again, no sign of the Patriots. I see no Aaron Banks. I see no Mr. Farage. I see none of those people. So another week goes by. The other thing is, of course, and something I think we'll probably answer better off in the second half of this tonight's show, which is what are you willing to give? What are you willing to die for? Because that is the situation that we're in with the world of work right now. It really is that dangerous at some levels. So on the subject of mutual aid, currently there are 11,000 frontline charities and community groups working to distribute food and more than 4,000 mutual aid groups now operating across the UK. If you want to find some, there's a few websites you can use. I'm going to probably email a couple of these today. We can put them in the show description for this week. But there is one simply called covidmutualaid.org, where, simple as that, you go on their homepage, type in your postcode, and it will tell you where they are near you. So that's very beneficial if you happen to be in need of that. Very, very easy to find. Now, another little one I just want to throw a bit of light on. The Give and Take Away Project in Derby. This was from an article on the Ethical Consumer website. It was written by Ruth Strange and posted on the 10th of April of this year. It's a short interview with a gentleman named Simon Jones from the project, and I just asked him a few questions about how the project that was already in existence has adapted to the COVID-19 project. So the Give and Take Away Project is a donations-based food service that delivers meals. It has grown from a gut health co-op in Derby called Praxis Probiotics and procures ingredients from a fellow co-op in the area called Sound Bites. Yes, I'll just give that a little moment there while you all chortle at the wonderful pun that is in that title. Good on you, folks. Simon Jones says that, quote, "We procure organic ingredients and make great meals and deliver to people's doors for a donation," end quote. "Anything donated after costs goes to the COVID-19 response work of Thrive Derby." Now that's the word Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, all in capitals. That's another similar project because so many of these people, of course, they all work together. So the Give and Take Away Project has been designed as a community thing, bringing people together to eat, and was always going to be donations based in the name of Thrive. Another quote here. "The pandemic means that we cannot or couldn't bring people together anymore, but also created a crisis of isolation and people being increasingly in need of healthy immune system boosting food, which is what we specialize in. That's the end of that quote. The group's underlying values and motivations are: we all care passionately about holistic health, ecological and social justice, plus care passionately about people eating locally produced organic whole foods, all as part of a healthy ecosystem. They also want to promote the values of cooperation and mutual aid. We do it all as ethically and affordable as possible, they say. People all over the world are sharing resources and knowledge or producing what they need themselves, ideas that now seem more relevant than ever. That's just a nice little quote, I thought, from Simon Jones in the interview. I thought that was a good... anyway, sounds very good to me. Best of luck to them. Thank you for your work. Again, if you want to start something similar yourself, I'm sure that's one place among others. Give and Take Away Project in Derby, who you could contact. And... yeah, and see what they say. Seeing a lot more responsibility being taken on by the co-ops and mutual aid groups as problems grow. The Food Foundation released a report on the 11th of April stating that just 3 weeks into the lockdown, 3 million people were food insecure. That's a lot of people in a short time. So we need to keep tabs on that as best we can. Now... before I move on to the next section, Dave, is there anything you want to say on that issue?
No, just it's quite pleasing to see that, and it'd be interesting to see how our attitudes change after when I'm hoping the lockdown, the lifting of the lockdown is not. I'm hoping it is not premature. Just on before you move on to the next part, John. Well, actually, we'll have a music break before you go into the next part. There has been a rise of trade union membership since the lockdown. We're talking something like 91,000, which is good. A huge percentage of that is, in fact, female members. That's great stuff.
John Bouts, John the Rage, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM. We'll be right back.
1991, that one. Cola Boy. Not Cola Cubes. Cola Boy and Seven Ways to Love. I like that one. John, we're on to... I must say, the people we've interviewed over the last few weeks, the subject has been COVID-19, and of course we're not going to ignore that. I know there's a lot of stuff on the TV and that, and I stopped watching it. But we can't pretend it's not happening, because it is a real social game changer. John?
Yes, it is. And I think one of the things that is difficult is there's one part of me that is the same cynical bastard I've been since I was a teenager, when I look to the powers that be and go, well, you can't really trust anything they say. You know, shrug your shoulders and then wander off to be the man alone, wandering off into the distance with, you know, no one to trust. And then there's a part of you that looks at a lot of governments, especially like the one we have here in the UK, and just go, dear God, all fucking mighty, help me. I can't believe these people are, they really are. Wow, they really are that bad. I mean, the best advert for anarchism we've ever seen. You just literally, they're dangerous. You can't trust these people. They are literally dangerous. I've said before that the present man in the news, Dominic Cummings, is a psychopath. I don't pretend that's a great high level of dialectical and analytical argument. It's just my opinion. I think the bloke's a psycho. I think he doesn't care about human life. And he doesn't even care about his child's human life, because supposedly he stuck his kid in the back of a car with both him and his supposedly infected wife and drove 40 miles to see if he could see properly, which is an amazing thing to come out with. What happens to social services? Don't they normally take your children away when you behave like this around them, when you endanger their lives? Maybe that doesn't apply to elitists like him. But, you really can't. What I'm seeing, especially with the kind of push to get us all back to work, and just before we went to the break, Dave, you were talking about the uptake in people joining trade unions. I couldn't recommend it enough. I mean, it's absolutely the best thing to do. It's the only way we're going to get through this with some kind of collective fight back. It simply isn't going to happen if we just carry on the way we've been before, if you leave everything to the market, because the market is what's got us here with, what is it now, an approximate 55,000 or so people in Britain dead from COVID-related illness and sickness. You know, that's where... It's interesting that this country and America, the ones that are so psychotically neoliberal above all else, are the ones with the worst death rates. You know, even other countries where there's some remnants of a working-class power base have managed to at least fight this back. But as we will always tell you on this show, folks, if you're here in Britain, and I'm sure wherever else in the world you're listening, there are equivalents. You can find them or give us a shout and we'll try and find them for you. But in this country, if you are in a workplace that you feel is unsafe, if you feel it is unsafe to yourself, to those around you, or to that matter to members of the public or customers, you invoke Section 44 of the Employment Act 1996. Is that the right one, Dave? I said it right. That's the one. Okay, yeah. Employment Rights Act, sorry, 1996. Section 44. Just by saying Section 44 will shut a good deal of managers up. If not, you just go and look it up. It is all about protecting yourself and others in the workplace. If you think it's dangerous, you don't work. You're well within your rights, not breaking any laws. You simply have to do that if you think that there is a danger. And this is the most dangerous thing any of us have dealt with. You know, this is an appalling virus that can be caught, can spread to others, and can kill. So please take very, very good care. No matter how low you feel in life, your life is worth more than this, okay? It's not worth throwing away. As one NHS worker said a few weeks back, which really stuck with me, don't call us heroes, because that makes us easier for us to die. It feeds into the hero theology, if you like, for want of a better word. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean. Mythology maybe is a better word. Yeah, the hero mythology, which allows you to be basically unreal, not a real person. You know, it's like you become like a myth. You become like something that's beyond. Yeah, like Wonder Woman. Yeah. Well, there was, you know, I often look to some people, my dear beloved friends, it's annoying. Some people like it, but I often find some analogy with films, usually more obscure ones, which I'd say this is a great proving for this. Well, two films tonight. One is Rumblefish and the other is Dead Man, a Jim Jarmusch film with Johnny Depp. And they both had the same tagline, which was no one can survive becoming a legend. And I, you know, it's weird because it's only a tagline for a film, but I think about that a lot, actually. I think that's really quite a poetic and powerful statement. No one survives becoming a legend. You know, you're not supposed to. So be wary with your hero worship, folks. I'll do a whole analysis of what I think about hero worship in another show when everything's calmed down a bit. In the meantime, so we're going to talk about workers in general, but some other people to whom I think is very important to shine a light on right now. Migrant workers. So here in the UK, we've seen a terrible immigration bill come back to the Commons. This attacks migrants for the crime of leaving their country and coming to this shithole to try and make it a better place to live. The government have already climbed down on trying to charge NHS workers born abroad from using the very service that they are upholding. But aside from such inhumane activity, there is also an important aspect relating to coronavirus and how treating migrants, refugees and those in need with such anti-human contempt actually makes it less safe for everybody. Right now, there are around 1,500 to 2,000 people imprisoned in the UK immigration detention centres. This kind of close-quarter living, along with the frequent movement of detainees, puts both them and staff at higher risk of infection. The government should release all detainees immediately with decent housing and healthcare so they can self-isolate like the rest of us if needed. This also requires better financial support so no one unwell ends up going to work. This support and protection must be extended to asylum seekers too, many of whom are living in private temporary accommodation contracted out by government to businesses and is understandably very crowded, as most places that have a landlord usually are. To solve this problem, we'll require independent health inspections of asylum accommodation and specific healthcare provisions where needed, coupled with relocation of particularly vulnerable people and anyone in accommodation found to be below standards. This will require suspending the no recourse to public funds and not applying penalties for staying home, such as missing signing appointments, which many people who are, you know, refugees and that and have to show up every so often at police stations and say, this is, you know, here I am and I'm still here and I haven't gone missing. Well, that either needs to be done online or on phone or something like that, but you need to make it possible so people don't have to show up. There's also a need for visa extensions. As the Labour campaign for free movement has stated, the following quote, Labour, the party, our unions and our movement must demand immediate action to protect migrants. So let's get on this in our social and work groups. The basic issue here is, again, part of the process of attacking people for being refugees, and again, in a moment, we'll see for migrants and immigrants, is that not only is it dehumanizing to them, we know this already, but it actually doesn't help any of us. Okay, so especially to anyone working class out there, your life has never been improved by bashing a foreigner. Secondly, these people are among us. We all live together, whether we like it or not, especially here in the big, lovely cities. So they have the same needs the rest of us have. So if you put people like this in a position whereby they need to work, regardless of whether the health of themselves or others is questionable, regardless of whether they should be able to access the same rights as the rest of us, such as, oh, I'm sick, I think I've got COVID, I better go and stay home for a week and isolate myself so I don't spread it to somebody else. If you take that away, we're all in trouble. So you get your little bit of Daily Mail, Daily Express, hard on giving joy of, I've slapped down a Johnny Foreigner in some way. Yeah, and now he's likely to be out in the street, unable to get away from what he needs to do. Because if he doesn't work, he might end up homeless, in which case then he's still in the street and still potentially a target for catching or possibly spreading the same illness. So, you know, just stop being a dick and be good to people. Now, you might be wondering about some of the things where I've said these people need to be given the correct temporary accommodation and income, etc. Yeah, A, they've been denied it for too long. B, nobody should be in an immigration detention centre because no one has ever been able to define. I mean, this place is a human rights black hole. No one's ever been able to define for me why somebody is in an immigration centre. Okay, so you say, well, actually, they've committed the crime maybe of illegal immigration. Okay, well, if it's a crime, then they should be charged with something and brought before the court or brought before a jury of their peers or however that system is going to work. But they don't. They just sit there. They sit there for years and years and years. You're often not capable of deporting them in good ways, sometimes because of the glorious red tape that prevents you from doing that, but also because sometimes it's just not cost effective. Therefore, these people are just treated to being stuck in a prison with no sentence. So they haven't had a day in court to answer for what they has been said, what they've been accused of doing, and they're just locked in prison for an indefinite time. And an immigration centre is a prison. So it's deeply inhumane, and it really bugs me that people just they seem so casual about that. But anyway, I wanted to tell you about a relief fund for domestic workers, also here in the UK. Many, if not most, domestic workers in Britain are migrants. All cleaners are under threat during this health crisis, from wherever they're from, as they are being called back to work by rich people who are unable to clean their own houses, particularly if they are female columnists married to men who are unable to find the vacuum cleaner. Now, this means that such people, the cleaners, are at a higher risk of not only catching but also spreading. Because think about it, when your job is a cleaner, you go to more than one place during the day. Chances are you use public transport. You're moving around all of the time from one household to the other household to the other household. Now, right now, you are being told, as I'm sure we're all being told, that you can't pop round your mum's house for a cup of tea if there's more than one person there. I know they've changed some of the regulations on that, but the idea is we're not supposed to be mixing households. Yet somehow cleaners are exempt from that. All of this, of course, is why you're constantly under threat from attack from the establishment, from media attacks, and to possible deportation. Again, the crime of being a migrant. So there is a hardship fund for immigrant domestic workers in Britain, which should help where they need, A, where there's holes in their wages, and B, so that they can be in a position where they don't have to rush back to work at the insistence of middle-class tossers. In light of the current COVID-19/coronavirus outbreak in the UK, migrant domestic workers will start to encounter further prejudice and precarity, both with clients cancelling their services and the risk of living migrant domestic workers being asked to vacate their workplaces and homes. Like other precariously employed workers, many of us exist without savings and are at the mercy of our employers who provide income and housing as part of the conditions of our work and also our visa. So that is a domestic hardship fund for people who have had work cancelled or for people who are trying not to go back and infect the place. I will again send a link to Dave when this is over for putting within the show description, if that's okay. Rent. Let's talk about rent. Okay. Not the show, the actual thing you have to do. Well, I'm going to start this section off with a quick quote. Lianli Faha, the UN Special Rapporteur on the rights to adequate housing, on the right to adequate housing. Quote, housing has become the frontline defence against the coronavirus. Home has rarely been more of a life and death situation. End of quote. Couldn't have put it better myself. While people cannot work, they are naturally encountering problems with bills, not least rent. There are now many movements calling for various versions of relieving the burden of rent during this time. In the UK, the Green Party have called for debt forgiveness, but so far Labour have not stepped up to this issue. In fact, they've shown themselves to be more the party of the landlords than the people right now. Some call for straight-up rent strikes, which can be hard to organise, but certainly are the most justified. And there is a wonderful history, not least in London, in the East End, of people doing just that, which maybe you should go check out and see if you can find some inspiration from it. There is a big movement going on in New York right now, too, to rent strike and to take on the landlords. I want to, again, throw a little bit of light on something here, the London Renters Union. It's just one organisation, but it's worth talking about. So So the LRU is a member-led campaigning union. Their aim is to stand together, to stand up to landlords with lower rents and longer tenancies for all as part of their goals. Winning homes for people, not profit. As part of the coronavirus rent crisis campaigning, they have teamed up with Living Rent and Acorn, calling on government to suspend rent, cancel rent debt, and protect renters from eviction. Now, this is still necessary because, as their website states, quote, tenant unions fought for and won a temporary freeze on evictions, but these measures are inadequate on their own. Polling shows 6 in 10 renters have suffered losses to their income, and many are left out of government support schemes and do not receive enough to cover rent and other essentials such as food. The Conservative 2019 manifesto pledged a better deal for renters, but current government policy leaves renters to fend for themselves, end of quote. Government guidelines make it clear landlords can issue eviction notices to renters in debt, and huge numbers of renters are still behind and at risk of eviction as soon as the temporary suspension lifts. Landlords are being their usual selves and harassing their victims, sorry, tenants, on a regular basis. A few results of this are the following. Millions of people feeling enormous pressure to prioritise rent over buying food. According to recent research by the Food Foundation, 1.5 million Britons have gone a whole day without food during the coronavirus pandemic. Many renters feel they have no choice but to break social distancing guidelines and go out to work so they can continue to pay their rent, putting themselves and others at risk of infection. Massive rent debt will make it impossible for many to rebuild their lives in the aftermath of the pandemic. The London Renters Union urged the government to suspend rent immediately, no rent should be due for the duration of the crisis, cancel all rent debt, arrears accumulated during this crisis should be written off. Protect renters from eviction. In England and Wales, Section 21 should be abolished immediately. Across the UK, protections against eviction should be expanded so no one loses their home while they are trying to cope with coronavirus and its aftermath. On their website, you can email your MP as part of this campaign. They're also asking the London Renters Union for translators. So if you're somebody who speaks a different language, please check that out. Now, before we move on, we're going to do a nice little bridge here between the issues on renting and homelessness. So I found some useful information, which I recorded and put on my SoundCloud page, which is quite often is like an addition to some of the shows we do here. But I think I'll read it to you here as well. And this is advice on evictions here in the UK. And this is, where did I get this from? Was it from Shelter? Yeah, I think this is from Shelter. I usually make a note of that, but I seem to have forgotten. I believe this is from the Shelter charity anyway. If your landlord kicks you out of your home without giving you notice or locks you out of your home, it is likely to be an illegal eviction, which is a criminal offence in all UK nations. This is still the case during the coronavirus pandemic. Under the Coronavirus Act, notice periods for evictions have been extended to 3 months. Andy Parnell of Shelter said the following, "This means that for most private and social tenants, even if they receive an eviction notice, they're likely to have the legal right to stay in their home. Sadly, there are some groups not protected by the recent changes to the eviction laws, including lodgers with live-in landlords. However, lodgers have fewer rights than private renters with live-out landlords. They do not need to go to court to evict and a lodger, to evict a lodger, but they are required to provide a reasonable notice period before asking them to leave the property. According to Shelter, renters in this situation should, quote, stay put." So, just to reiterate what was said there, you do have less rights as a lodger with a live-in landlord, but they still have to go through a process to evict you, a reasonable notice period before asking you to leave the property. And as for renters, if you receive an eviction notice under the present conditions, it is likely to be illegal because of the Coronavirus Act. So stay put, in the words of Andy Parnell of Shelter. Right. Homelessness. We've seen many homeless people taken in from the streets as part of the government initiative to prevent the spread of the virus through the most vulnerable. While our attention has been taken to this failing government and their trips to Durham this week, they have, according to a story in the Manchester Evening News, started throwing people back out in the streets again, or as they put it, quietly dropped the everybody in scheme as it's put in the paper. This scheme has housed 6,000 rough sleepers since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite its flaws, it is estimated 6,000 vulnerable rough sleepers were able to get off the streets of Britain and into temporary accommodation or hotel rooms. It not only proves that we can solve homelessness whenever the political will is there, but it also gives an inarguable moral case for doing just that, not least in times when this crisis could go either way, which I very much think that it's the time that we're in at the moment. Don't believe, I know all of us want to rush back to our social places, but just bear in mind that the recent spike in COVID infections in South Korea has come mainly from nightclubs. So it's not just miserable gits like me that tell you you shouldn't go to the nightclub. Not only do you have to listen to crap music now, you could end up getting a terrible disease, so do be careful. It's always a little difficult to work out if the confusion and the obtuse nature of services like the Everybody In Act is down to the intention on the part of this government or incompetence or wild combination of both. But the result will be the same. People being thrown back into the streets, especially while all of our attention is taken in a different direction. The lack of clarity is also rather cruel towards people who are already suffering great vulnerability. But it's another thing. One thing we must call for during this time and going forward is for unused property to be used for those in need. This includes the homeless and the most also vulnerable, such as asylum seekers and detainees, as we mentioned earlier on. We cannot allow people to suffer like this, and again, our organisations are paramount in pushing this change in how we treat the homelessness to become permanent. We need to change how we see the homelessness in this country. Yeah, I mean, if you're a regular listener to this show, me and Dave have gone over this multiple times, and we will continue to do so, because ending homelessness is a project I would very much like to be associated with. It's one of the most important things that we can do, I think. I don't think we've ever seen a situation like the one we're seeing at the moment, where what we're actually trying to do now is not so much get people indoors from the streets, but trying to prevent them from being thrown back out in the streets. It's interesting, you know, we've struggled so long to get them in, now we just need to make sure nobody comes to throw them out. Easier said than done, but nevertheless, it's an interesting place to be. It's a totally different place to be, simple as that. We've never had the, I don't know if I'd quite go as far as to call it the upper hand, but we've got a better hand right now, a much better hand, and I think we need to work with that. We simply must. It's not optional to fail this, especially on a moral level. Now, among other organisations, you can of course contact the wonderful Streets Kitchen, who have been campaigning all through this. They pushed for the national plan on bringing people indoors. Of course, you didn't hear much about that when the government finally came up with something or released something. Apparently, it was all down to their benign wonderfulness. But they had this was Streets Kitchens and the like, pushing for people to be treated like human beings and brought indoors away from unnecessary suffering. Okay, so that's kind of part one of the show. Before we go on, Dave, do you want to jump in?
No, it's really, thank you, John. There's a lot of work gone in there. And support and unpaid voluntary support. And there's a saying when we have meetings with any business, as trade union reps, and they use the initials or the abbreviations. Oh, that's BAU. And I've said it at the top of the show, it's business as usual, and I hate that abbreviation, because what that BAU means is business as usual, doesn't it? It means actually that. Listen, we're going to go to a convenient music break, and when John comes back, we're going to be talking more about COVID-19 and support for especially our migrant domestic workers.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
I think that's from 1992, I'm not sure, but it's KWS, and Please Don't Go, which was a classic 90s pop record, John. We got a lot to get through, and John is rearing to go. John, go for it.
Yes. Just to point out, it doesn't matter what year it was, because the 1990s was just one whole hideous hodgepodge of cultural non-distinction. So that's why it's difficult to remember what year any record comes from. It could have been 92, it could have been 99. They all sound the same. Awful time to be alive, kids. Okay, we are a few notes I've made on returning to work. We're being told, so lazy, obviously, you know, we've been locked down all over the world, and in many parts of the world now, they're trying to ease that up and return people to the workplace for the needs of capital, not the needs of people. So here in the UK, we're being told, not really asked, to put our lives on the line so the system can return to their normal. A system that never gave us enough, that persecuted many and hurt people and even killed them before this with austerities, a terrible austerity regime we've had for 10 years, and some in positions of power are still calling for it. Meanwhile, the government are planning to make public spending cuts, which means services and wages, to deal with their debts again. Something to think about when you clap like a seal on a Thursday night. The people you're clapping for are about to be in the firing lines yet again as part of a system which is being slowly privatised and destroyed. And once it's gone, it's gone. Can't get it back. Okay, now, there have been many examples of vile fuckwittery during this time, and whether they just be straight up and out capitalists or they've been, you know, gargoyles like Dominic Cummings. But one I'm going to focus on now quickly, because there's something particular I want to say about his business practices and what it amounts to for working people, is Tim Martin. Now, for those of you who don't know, he runs Wetherspoon Pubs, which is a collection all over the country of many cases formerly independent pubs, sometimes brand new buildings, which have been specifically designed to be completely annihilated of character and differentiation. They do have a handful of decent prices for some of their stuff in there, which is what's attractive to people. They're pretty repulsive. So Tim Martin is determined to open the Wetherspoons pubs as soon as he can, because his millions are not being topped up by overworking staff and nicking from their wages. He has shown a staggering level of callousness towards staff, wanting them to carry on working during the pandemic. He all but refused at one point to shut his pubs until he was basically ordered to do. And then when the law compelled him to do this, he fired them all. Not furloughed, despite his millions, but put everyone else he knew out, knowing that in a country run into the ground by the conservative mates of his, he can get staff whenever he wants. Plenty more in a failed economy. There always is. So he just basically threw his staff out in the street. Reject demands to make our vile bosses richer. Those who defied health and safety, underpaid us, stole from us. Basically, let these awful companies go bust. That's part of my point with this. Now, do you really want to die for the likes of Tim Martin? Want to rush back to work in his workplace? And look, I know this is a lecture coming from someone who's in paid employment and has been for a long period of time and has a good trade union. I'm very well aware of that. I'm aware of my privilege. Okay, but my point is, I would like to put the likes of Tim Martin out of work, out of a position of being able to preside over others and employ others, because he's dangerous. Again, is my point when it comes down to it. I'm not interested in making him richer. I'm not interested in other people being put in harm's way. He should be run out of business and he should be run out of town. These jobs, as this situation has showed, are precarious. And I just want more. I want better for working class people. I want people to be able to get better protected, better paid, more meaningful jobs where they're not at risk all of the time. But also when, you know, the people, they go over and over themselves and do backflips going, oh, but this is, you know, I need a job now and I need to pay the rent. And I need to. Yes, of course you do. But I don't see a long-term gain in working for the likes of Tim Martin, because his plan, his idea, whether it be from zero-houring people to just chucking them all out every time there's a shutdown, and there could be another shutdown very easily, then it's people like this that shouldn't be allowed to dictate the direction that the employment market goes. So long term, but it's becoming shorter and shorter as we go, people like Tim Martin need to be out of business. You know, you can't, don't, I understand if you haven't got an option, you haven't got an option and no one's judging you. But if you can avoid working for someone like him, please do so. Because he doesn't, it's not going to benefit you and it could potentially put your life in danger. But I think that's something, as you know, the trade union movement, among others, I think we need to, rather than just maintain things and try not to let them get worse, I think we need to be more campaigning going forward. And one of the ways we need to do that is we need to say to the likes of Tim Martin or the likes of Michael O'Leary, get the fuck out of business. We don't want people working for you. You shouldn't be allowed to, because you fail the standards. You fail the standards for various things you've done, whether it's been denying people the right to form a union, or nicking out of their wages, or underpaying them in the first place, or putting them in harm's way, or just kicking them out of the street when you faced a situation that you couldn't deal with. You've got your millions, you shut down, you went home and locked the doors of your mansion and you left everyone else to starve. That kind of behaviour is dangerous and nobody should work for somebody like that. Okay. Yet again, I think we'll see that the real agenda of reopening the economy is to break working people's power yet again. They've not forgotten how inspiring the 5 years of having a real Labour leader was, along with all of the trade union building that has happened during this time. Workers are getting smart again, and this killer virus is a great time for them to try and knock us back down again. So that's absolutely the agenda right now. I've no doubt about it. They're also petrified of the implications of having such a closed economy for so long. The obvious short-term problems, but also how we might all look to build the alternatives out of necessity, but also because now we have the time to think rather than be exhausted from working some awful job all the time. These fuckers know that all of the chatter going on is about better ways of living, and that's why they're trying to stop us. They can't let us be off work for too long, because we'll start to realise, hey, there's better than this. We can do better things. You know, the people are going to realise things through working in mutual aid to find out that actually you can live a better life. We can do things in a different way, in a better way, and we need to go forward. In the meantime, there's plenty of worker organised action is taking place, such as Spoon Strike, who have had organised to hold Tim Martin to account and get wages for the time that they've worked before shutdown. They are a very much Wetherspoons-related organisation. They're open invitation to come on this show, because we'd love to speak to them. Among other people. In fact, kicking back to what we said earlier, we'd also like to speak to anyone from the London Renters Union or Acorn or Living Rent or any of those groups. Right, Dave, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. We'll have a quick chat in a second. I just want to say something about media coverage, but I've noticed the time, and I think that for all this stuff I've got on Amazon, we should maybe leave that till next week, because I've got a lot of info on what's going on there. And okay, so let's just have a little chat about the media, and then for the last 5-10 minutes before we play that song, we'll have a chat. So the media in this country has shown new depths of hopeless obedience during this crisis, reporting government press releases like their news, failing to do any actual journalism or hold the government to account. A funny thing that's happened today is last night, Emily Maitlis, who, if you're not savvy with the news in this country, you might not know, is about as blue as can be. I mean, she's raging Tory. Nevertheless, she opened Newsnight with an introduction which stated facts about Dominic Cummings' behaviour and what he's been up to. And now, as I'm seeing on the Twitters, accordingly, the BBC have made some kind of pandering, cowardly apology because the government complained, saying that they were... they complained last night and they've answered it today, which is record fucking timing for the BBC. Saying that they are all about fair, reasonable and righteous journalism. Well, as someone's pointed out, was that the reasonable and righteous journalism when Laura Koonsberg reported that a Labour activist had punched an advisor to Matt Hancock during the last election, or just basically Laura Koonsberg, full stop. Tweeting something from Dominic Cummings' blog, editing out laughter of the PM when he was on Question Time during the last election. So no, that's complete crap. But these things matter. I'm not just here for cheap media bashing, and I'm certainly not jumping on the bandwagon of the right-wing Brexiteer ones who are like, you know, hashtag media scum or something, because they feel like they're attacking Cummings for those reasons. No, he deserves to be attacked. He's out of order. They failed, for instance, to cover. Now, did some of you know this? Apparently, a couple of weeks back, when they were talking about opening up the economy again, Grant Shapps, the transport secretary, was asked if he'd get on public transport right now, and he said he wouldn't. Michael Walker from the Great Navarra Media pointed out that in the two-day daily press conferences around this time, there was no mention of the TUC opposition to the government's back-to-work plan, which, by the way, is quite substantial. Maybe we'll read that out next week as well, actually, because I've still got some notes on that. We'll talk about it. I'll make a note of that now. But, yeah, TUC are in great disagreement with it. So this is the kind of stuff that's not, among other things, not being reported. So, Dave, what do you think? Let's just go over that for the last couple.
Well, firstly, the opening statements from the government during the lockdown was, we're in talks with the union. So you've just re-legitimised the TUC, which is great. I mentioned trade union membership has gone up. And a lot of the key workers, which were announced just before the lockdown, they're pretty much unionised. And I think people have had time stuck in their houses to actually switch the news off, because they're not drifting in and out of work, coming home and then going out to the pub or whatever, or nightclubs with terrible music, John. And they've had to sit in front of the telly pretty much for 3 months and realise it's really bad, TV is bad. And I think people actually had the time to have the debate, you know, the debate about what's happening and why is it happening and clapping and all that stuff. And I just think that it's a defining moment for what was business as usual, which probably wasn't really business, it's not business as usual. And realising that the TV is pretty much depressing, that the stuff they ram down our throat, and families and people are talking to each other and seeing where they are in life and what their future holds and what their future holds and how we can make it better, and how we were convinced that things that benefit people like free broadband and funding for the NHS actually is not loony, it's not crazy. Things like social care and funding social care within local councils is not a loony thing, and we have the money. I think people have seen on social media real statistics like 2008, £500 billion bailout for the banks, which we never got back, we're never going to get back. And a lockdown has cost the UK economy £14 billion a month. So that's just a very small fraction to keep people safe and alive. And I think people were saying, well, that's more important than the economy. Because the economy was never at risk. It's never going to be at risk. And, of course, the people that have been telling them that, these lies and fear, because that's how they project, for you to believe them, they project fear. They've been projecting things of fear, things like migrant workers, Muslims, banks not giving you money on your cash point, you know, they just transmit fear, and I think people just realise actually it's all bullshit. It's all actually bullshit. I just want to live. I want to stay alive, you know, and, well, that's my view anyway, John.
Yeah, no, I think you're quite right, and I'll come back on a couple of things. Firstly, newspaper circulation is going down, we believe, which couldn't come soon enough in this country. Fuck a lot of them, they're all awful. Don't bother with them anymore. Yeah, absolutely, people are. Yeah, again, I will end with the question that I always do these days, which we've mentioned quite a bit tonight, which is, you know, what will it take? What are you willing to give? Because if you are willing to go out and give your life for someone like Tim Martin or anything else, you know, just so you can get the small amount of money he grants you, no judgment, but I don't know what to say to you. I can't help. We need to change this. We need to change it wholly. We need to change it permanently. And we can't rely on the liberal classes because they have nothing to lose. They have more to lose than we do. And you can't really, in a situation like this, you can't rely on people who have a benefit in keeping the system the same. We need to have a very, very different way of the world. And, you know, the economy, I mean, it's interesting time to talk about the economy anyway, because the economy, as we know it, is changing anyway. Automation is coming. Many, many jobs are going to be laid off. This crisis, for some of them, you will see some jobs just not restarting. Maybe not industries, but sub-industries maybe, will just not restart because they'll know, well, and now is as good a time as any. Let's just go full ahead with the machines, bring them in, and we'll do that job that way. We saw this with downsizing. We saw this with how globalization was used back in the 80s and the 90s, where jobs were just moved to any other part of the world because it's cheaper. That's not going to stop. As we see, one of the things that is so very telling about the failures in this country to provide protective equipment for healthcare workers, etc., is that when you have no manufacturing base, not only do you have this problem where you don't have the capacity to do that, but you don't have the knowledge to do that. So really, you're going to have to be the kind of person who teaches yourself how to. I mean, we do a fair few courses, don't we, Dave? I've yet to see one that says how to use a 3D printer. Nevertheless, how to use one to print a face mask, a face covering for someone, you have to rely on someone else already knowing how to do that. If you imagine that being something that could have been done in any large building, any old factory, with enough space for people to socially distance and enough PPE, and you could have given jobs to so many of the unemployed in this country, whether they be furloughed or they be people who have been unemployed already or long-term unemployed, you could have taught them a brand new task. You could teach, you still can, there's still time. You know, you could teach them a skill, a real skill, like how to manufacture things with a, among other things, a 3D printer. I don't just want to lean on 3D printers, but you know what I mean. There are other ways of doing it. You know, you can teach people how to do this. You can teach them how to make windmills and solar panels, because again, whether anyone thinks they're pretty or not, they're being used, they're being sold around the world. While you constantly rely on other people using them, you could build that. You know, this is what just some ideas. I'm just throwing them off the top of my head, not even with great amount of evidence. But nevertheless, I still think they've got more legitimacy than going back to work for the fucking likes of Tim Martin, frankly. So yeah, we can do stuff. We can make it different. What do you want the world to look like? What do you want to your life to be like? How do you want to feel when you get home at night? Do you want to feel exhausted, battered, beaten down, or do you want to feel like you've really done something of great worth and that your life isn't as crap as it was before? I know what I want to do. Anyway, thanks again, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Yep, and we're going to play out with this. This is a great track by Martha, and Tracks FM went on Bandcamp and did download the track, and the money will go directly to the group. This is Martha, Move to Durham and Never Leave.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.tracksfm.org.